This podcast is brought to you by SMC. MoneyWise, be wise.
You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
The top business headlines from India and around the world, and then some. That is what you can expect on Editor's Pick of the Day on Money Control. Welcome to this podcast. I'm Sheetal. Let's get you started with the top India business headlines.
Editor's Pick of the Day.
Air India has called for bids in an effort to auction more than 60 properties. And this again is in an effort to raise funds. The real estate assets being put under the hammer include prime properties in Mumbai, Kolkata, Delhi, Bengaluru and Hyderabad. Now, the previous auction in April saw only a handful of sales of the 56 properties put up. And really, the condition the real estate is in, according to sources, it is unlikely that this auction is going to be successful. Now, in 2012, the centre had approved selling Air India's assets to raise 5,000 crore rupees over a 10-year period. However, only 600 crore rupees has been realised till now. Meanwhile, the centre has moved closer to a complete exit from Air India. According to a report in the Business Standard, the Committee of Secretaries, or COS, chaired by Cabinet Secretary P.K. Sinha, has agreed in principle to sell 95% in Air India. The report says that the proposal should go before the ministers' committee in the next couple of weeks. The government is taking all the necessary steps to make the sale of the national carrier a success, including reducing the potential buyer's debt burden and tweaking the privatization rules as required. Yes Bank, which received support from the stock markets after it raised $270 million through its successful and oversubscribed offering through the Qualified Institutional Placement, or QIP, is now learned to be looking to raise another $600 million from large investors. Live Mint quotes reliable sources in the know, saying that the bank is encouraged after its success in raising money in a weak or at least vacillating equity market. There has, of course, been no confirmation of this from official quarters. The bank had planned to raise $1 billion to shore up its capital adequacy ratio. Yes Bank needs to raise capital to reach a balance between capital adequacy rules and business growth. The bank has been grappling with huge bad loans. Its net profit for the April to June period fell to 114 crores from 1,109 crores in the same period last year. Its share has also sunk about 80% from about 400 rupees a year ago. Then in mainstream news, government offices and schools in the Kashmir Valley are set to start functioning from Monday, according to an announcement that was made today. The order was passed by Jammu and Kashmir Governor Satyapal Malik. Though the restrictions have been lifted in Jammu and Ladakh, the valley continues to have restrictions on phone and internet connections, and Section 144 remains in force. Restrictions on the movement of people in Srinagar have, however, been lifted. According to Times of India, the Kashmir government is also likely to soon start restoring the functioning of landlines in Kashmir in a phased manner. The central government has also told the Supreme Court, in response to petitions seeking immediate lifting of restrictions in the valley, that the restrictions in force now would be removed in a phased manner over the next few days. Meanwhile, Defence Minister Rajnath Singh has hinted that circumstances could change India's avowed policy of no first use where the nuclear option was concerned. He was speaking at the first death anniversary of former Prime Minister Atal Bihari Vajpayee at Pokhran, the site of both of India's nuclear tests in 1974 and 1998. The profligacy of the electricity boards in India is almost legendary, with most of them running huge losses as a result of inefficiency caused by maintenance issues, losses in distribution, to say nothing about pricing. Now, on top of this is the generous usage by governmental institutions, for which payment rarely is made on time, sometimes not for years on end. The centre is now learnt to be mulling over an idea of bringing to book the various state-run electricity distribution corporations. Live Mint, quoting an anonymous source, said that the centre was toying with the idea of denying loans to state governments to the extent of the losses of their electricity boards. That would be quite a restraint, considering that the cumulative debt of the state discoms in India in 2015 was 2.45 trillion rupees, and this is only likely to have grown further in the last 4 years. The state governments have only addressed about 80,000 crore rupees, which is only about a third of this amount. Since this would force the state governments to cover the shortfall with their own subsidies, the centre is said to be hoping that it would force the states to set in order the affairs of their discoms. Yesterday, over 300 restaurants in Gurugram, Delhi and Mumbai, protesting against their deep discounting practices, pulled out of their deals with dining apps such as Zomato Gold, Easy Diner and Dine Out. Swiggy and Uber Eats were not among the apps mentioned in the move led by the National Restaurant Association of India. The protests have come in the middle of various pressures faced by restaurants, including higher rents, slowdown in demand, and the removal of the input tax credit under the revised provisions of the GST. The restaurants say the added heavy discounts that have to be absorbed from the dine-in sales coming through the apps is putting increased stress on their businesses. In response to the restaurants' action, Zomato Gold, which has 1 million subscribers and 6,500 partner restaurants, has written to the protesting restaurants to provide a 45-day notice so that users will not be inconvenienced. Four other aggregators have called for a discussion. Some of the restaurants are likely to be delisted pending a resolution, said Rahul Singh, who's the president of NRAI. Former India and Tamil Nadu cricketer V.B. Chandrasekhar has died at the age of 57. He was found hanging in his home in Chennai and is thought to have committed suicide owing to financial troubles connected with his ownership of V.B. Kanchiviran's in the Tamil Nadu Premier League. Chandrasekhar played 7 one-day internationals for India and also scored nearly 5,000 runs in first-class cricket. Chandrasekhar was the person instrumental in bringing Mahendra Singh Dhoni to Chennai Super Kings in the Indian Premier League. Joy Bhattacharya, in his condolence tweet, remembered Chandrasekhar in the first IPL auction, quoting the then highest figure of $1.5 million to get Dhoni over to CSK. Chandrasekhar was the one who convinced N. Srinivasan, the owner of CSK, to choose Dhoni over Sehwag. The cricketing world has expressed shock over the demise of Chandrasekhar, who has played pivotal roles as both player and administrator. More news from the world of sports. The Indian cycling team has won a gold at the Junior Track Cycling World Championships in Frankfurt. Now, this was India's first cycling gold at a world event. The four-member team of Izao Albin, Ronaldo Singh, Rojit Singh and Jemsh Singh beat the Australian team in the final and also had the fastest lap, 12.915 seconds in the competition. The Indian boys' sprint team was also part of the team which won gold in the men's team sprint at the Asian Championships in Jakarta in January while breaking the Asian record. And from there, let's take a quick look at the local equity markets. Well, the market ended flat today following weak global cues and uncertainty over the announcement of any revival package by the government. Indices had turned volatile in the afternoon session and the BSE Sensex gained about 39 points. That's 0.1%, led by banking and automobile stocks. Now, on the other hand, the tech and metal scripts saw some losses. Power Grid, Maruti Suzuki, Yes Bank and IndusInd Bank were the top gainers on the 30-share Sensex, whereas TCS, Vedanta, HCL Tech and HDFC were the top laggards. Nifty 50 closed 18 points higher at 11,048. That's again flattish, but with a positive bias, up 0.17%. Through the day, the Sensex and Nifty had seen steep falls of 337 points and 105 points respectively before rebounding by close. And with respect to the global markets, the international indices stabilized after a couple of days of being rocked on account of yield curve reversals, with most bourses closing marginally higher than the previous close. Let's get you some international headlines next on Editor's Pick of the Day. A whistleblower has accused General Electric of masking its financial problems through the use of accounting jugglery. GE stocks took a dive on the New York Stock Exchange following this accusation by Harry Markopoulos, who was also the whistleblower in the Bernie Madoff Ponzi scheme. Markopoulos published a report online saying GE's accounting tinkering could be to the extent of $38 billion and said it was, and we quote, a bigger fraud than Enron, unquote. According to Markopoulos, GE is understating the losses in its insurance claims, which could put the company in the risk of bankruptcy. GE, in response, has dismissed Markopoulos' claims and said it stands by its financial reporting. Then the Alibaba Group Holding has reported a 42% increase in sales and more than doubled its profit in its last quarter, beating expectations and the uncertainty from a saturated e-commerce market in China and a trade conflict with the US. Its shares rose by about 5% on Thursday. The online retail giant attributed the robust earnings to the continued growth in its core retail business. In its 20th year, Alibaba has been expanding into the physical space, with its grocery retail chain, Fresh Hippo, expanding to 150 locations in 17 cities. The company is also expected to raise another round of capital. In other international headlines, after denying entry to U.S. Democratic lawmaker Rashida Tlaib following President Donald Trump's tweet, Israel has allowed her to visit her family in the West Bank on humanitarian grounds. This has come after Tlaib wrote to the Israeli Interior Minister that she would respect restrictions and not promote boycotts against Israel during her visit. Democratic Congresswoman Tlaib and Ilhan Omar were supposed to visit Israel before Trump tweeted that the two, and we quote, hate Israel and all Jewish people, unquote. which prompted Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to bar the two congresswomen from visiting Israel. Political observers said the tweet was part of Trump's attempt to create divisions within the Democratic Party. Sudan's military rulers and protest leaders are scheduled to sign a landmark deal reached after a bloody uprising, which is meant to pave the way for civilian rule. The signing on Saturday will officialize a constitutional declaration inked on August 4th that ended nearly 8 months of upheaval that saw masses mobilize against the 30-year rule of Omar al-Bashir, who was eventually ousted in April. The deal was welcomed by both sides. While the compromise meets several of the protest camp's key demands, its terms leave the military with ample powers and its future civilian government with daunting challenges. The composition of the new transitional civilian majority ruling council is due to be announced on Sunday, followed 2 days later by the naming of a prime minister. Elections must be held after the 39-month transitional period that began on the 4th of August. From international headlines, let's move on and bring you some of the top headlines in the world of technology. People looking forward to Huawei's highly anticipated foldable phone will have to wait a while longer, because it turns out that this phone that was supposed to have launched in September will now only see light of day in the month of November. WeWork's S-1 filing apparently shows that it's trying to present itself as a tech company. And what really gave people the idea that this was what was happening? The use of the word platform about 170 times in its S-1 filings. When actually, according to experts, WeWork's finances show that it looks more like a real estate company, which tends to incur higher costs from leasing and property. YouTube is being sued by LGBTQ content creators who allege that the company discriminated against the creators on the platform and restricted their reach and ability to make money. In fact, the class action lawsuit accuses YouTube of unfairly applying its policies in a way that deems queer content as shocking and sexually explicit while letting hate speech thrive. And finally, an Apple headline. Apple may just be naming its next iPhones iPhone 11, iPhone 11 Pro, and iPhone 11 Pro Max. Now, this is according to a case manufacturer. So the French Apple blog iPhone Soft said that it obtained a document from ESR, which is a company that makes protective cases for iPhones and Samsung Galaxy phones, which showed purported images of these new iPhones in their inventory with the names iPhone 11, iPhone 11 Pro, and iPhone 11 Pro Max. What's in a name when it comes to an iPhone? Well, everything's in a name when it comes to our odd news selection of a day. Ohio has attempted to trademark the word the. You heard me right. Yeah, so the Ohio state has submitted an application with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office to claim one of the most common words in the English language, all for itself. An application for the was sent to the office on the 8th of August on behalf of the school, whose fans are constantly reminding people to call it the Ohio State University. And according to Washington trademark attorney Josh Gerben, in order for a trademark to be registered for a brand of clothing, for example, the trademark must be used in a trademark fashion. In other words, it has to be used on tagging or labeling for the products. And in this case, just putting the word the in front of a hat or the front of a shirt is not sufficient trademark use. And so Gerben believes that the trademark office is probably going to turn down the Ohio State's application. And finally, yes, facts sometimes are stranger than science fiction. Invisibility cloaks, if you thought these belonged in Harry Potter movies, well, turns out that that's not the case at all. Of course, you can't really call this a cloak because we're talking about a ship over here. So can't really, you know, use a cloak. But researchers have come up with ways of directing waves and currents around an object in a fluid, effectively hiding the object's presence by cloaking its effect on the surrounding water. Now, these techniques can reduce drag or the rocking effect of waves on an object within the cloak. Now, whether for light, sound, or water, such cloaks work by steering waves so they travel around an object rather than scattering off of it, which would disrupt the waves' paths and reveal the object's presence. Instead, these cloaks force the waves to take a small detour around the object and return to the same configuration that they'd be if the object weren't there. How cool. So apparently ships can be cloaked. Cloaking devices are here. Well, that's it from us on Editor's Pick of the Day on Money Control. Thanks for listening.
This has been today's Editor's Pick. And you've been listening to Money Control.